Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Earl Tupper, the inventor of Tupperware, is at a Tupperware party, believe it or not. This is hypothetical. I'm making this up to make a point. Anyway, he's at a Tupperware party, and he's sitting in the corner, and he's scowling, because the air around him is full of laughter as a group of women take turns to mock their husbands in a thinly veiled party game that they've devised. And on a table in front of them are piles of Earl's plastic containers. The containers themselves are beautiful in their simplicity, simple in their design, almost puritanical in their ethos, except that several are now filled with frozen daiquiris, and the atmosphere in the party is getting a little bit fruity, shall we say. And standing in the middle of this scene is a woman called Brownie Wise. This is the woman who invented the Tupperware party in which Tupperware products are sold. And it's the parties that made Earl a millionaire. And she's flailing her arms around saying, "Girls!" She's got a southern accent, so imagine a southern accent. "Girls," she says, "look up to the stars. Reach to the stars, because anything you want can be yours, including this beautiful Tupperware." That was a very bad southern accent. I apologise, but you get the idea. Anyway, back to Earl, sitting there in the corner. The scowl on his face deepens. Da, da, da. Welcome to Patented. It's my podcast about the history of inventions. It's a podcast where I get to talk about interesting things to interesting people. And today I'm talking about Tupperware, which sounds kind of utilitarian and, you know, dull, but has a really, really interesting history and a fantastic story. We all have a cupboard in our kitchen, I suggest, which is filled with Tupperware boxes, most of which are missing their lids. Most of the lids are missing their boxes. And they generally create lots of mess in the cupboard and fall out when you open the door. But Tupperware is very interesting because it epitomises really the post-war suburban American dream. But if you pop open the lid and peek inside the history of Tupperware, you will notice that not all is as it seems, because there was a battle for the soul of Tupperware, a battle fought between the inventor of the Tupperware box, a man who stood for conformity, simplicity and such values, and the inventor of the Tupperware party, who was a woman who stood for something much more subversive. My guest today to discuss all this is Alison Clark. She's a professor of design history and theory at the University of Applied Arts in Vienna, and she is the author of the fascinating book Tupperware: The Promise of Plastic in 1950s America. Alison, thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to the show. How the heck did you... You've written a book about the history of Tupperware, not just a kind of a little, you know, a proper book on the history of Tupperware. Who knew that Tupperware had such a detailed and interesting history?
It is an amazing history. And I think what inspired me to write it was, firstly, I didn't have any Tupperware in my own home growing up. I was one of those poor kids at school with just a bit of silver foil or brown paper.
Wait, was Tupperware kind of, is it a symbol of affluence? I never really considered it as a particular symbol of affluence.
I think it was. It was in Britain, it was really aspirational because it only actually arrived in the 60s with the growth of new builds, suburban houses and stuff. So it's a 50s American product, but it only arrived in Britain as this kind of aspirational type of thing. So yeah, it was definitely, I was the kid at school with brown paper and didn't quite understand why I didn't have a pink plastic tub. Mm.
You know what I had when for school sandwiches? I had, it was an old Walls ice cream plastic thing, which basically was a kind of a Tupperware box.
Yes, that's exactly the kind of thing my parents would have used. Yeah, why waste money on fangled American plastic stuff when you can use an old ice cream tub?
Well, actually, this is an interesting story because, of course, we've got an engineering story, the invention of Tupperware, which we'll come to in a moment. But also the kind of the language of Tupperware. It kind of goes from, I suppose, a utilitarian object to a kind of modernist, socialist, value-laden product through to a kind of postmodernist, you know, artifacts. It takes us through all kinds of interesting avenues. But why don't we start? Let's start at the beginning. Let's start at the very beginning. Let's start with the kind of utilitarian object, that kind of rather Spartan object. Where did it come from originally, and where did the name come from?
The inventor of Tupperware was Earl Tupper, who was this slightly mad and actually woman-hating inventor, which was unfortunate because...
Why was he a woman-hating?
Well, his product, I should probably clarify that. His product began as a utilitarian product. It was supposed to be for farmers and kind of chemists to store stuff in. But he simply didn't sell it. He tried to advertise it really desperately, unsuccessfully across America in 1949. And then a lady called Brownie Wise discovered this product and started selling it on the door-to-door sales plan, kind of introducing it, literally knocking on people's doors, and created the Tupperware party.
That's kind of part two of the story, if you like. That's the sort of explosion of that. I just want to, let's just talk about Earl Tupper. Is that his name? Earl Tupper. So it's 1949. Kitchens were not filled with plastic in 1949. They were filled with china and porcelain and other things. What was his relationship with the material, first of all? Like, what was the inspiration for making this box, this rather puritanical, utilitarian object?
Earl Tupper was a sort of inventor tinker from New England, and he worked in the burgeoning plastics industry during that time. And really, plastic, people didn't understand what exactly it could be used for. It was very experimental. So there were loads of disasters, like disintegrating shower curtains and plastic salad bowls that kind of dissolved on contact with vinegar. So it's very much experimental. And Tupper worked in a plastic factory and started to experiment with injection molding and created a container that was like, it was an inverted version of a paint tin, if you can imagine that, the lid, and created this airtight lid. So the whole idea was to try and get plastic into people's homes, this alien product, and he called it poly-T material of the future. It wasn't even described as Tupperware at that point. That came much later.
That's interesting. So yes, so this new burgeoning world of plastics, it was the future. There was this rather brave new world Jetsons thing about sort of plastic post-war that was going to change everything.
Well, House Beautiful had a whole series about kind of that created a sort of landscape of plastic. It actually mapped it out. So polyethylene, perspex, to try and explain to the consumer, particularly women, what they could use plastic for. So it was this, like a kind of uncharted territory, literally. And so that's what Earl Tupper was trying to do as well, break into this new plastic consumer culture with his product.
Was he aiming for the Tupperware box? I mean, or was he just kind of pootling around in his factory and you think, oh, look what I've made. That would be good for storing sandwiches in. Or was he looking to create that? Did he have the idea first? I'm trying to get a sense of the process.
Yeah, well, what's important to know about, although this kind of product ended up in the Museum of Modern Art, New York, as this beautiful, pristine, utilitarian, form follows function, modernist object, but actually Tupper was also creating these completely crazy things like plastic telescopic tie racks and all sorts of kind of junk stuff that was totally gimmicky and novelistic. So really, Tupperware was a kind of an accident among lots of many wacky products like upside down underwater spectacles and all sorts of crazy things. And reading his invention notebooks, It's just amazing.
Does his notebook exist? Is that...
Absolutely. It's housed in the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, and it is a delight to read because it's the ramblings of a 1930s inventor imagining this whole new world. And also, there's a communist threat at the time, and he starts to become slightly interested by communist ideas, but then is capitalism the thing that's going to solve the world's ills? So it's very much a product. He's definitely not neutral. He's definitely using it to search for some kind of utopian America.
Why, actually, one more thing. Why was he a woman hater? You said he was a misogynist. What was going on there? What was the...
Well, an interesting observation to make about these invention notebooks and his whole, the way he thought about inventions, but he got his ideas from the women that surrounded him, from his sisters, his mother. So he came up with things like matching nail implants and knitting needles, like completely off the wall stuff. But they were all inspired by the women around him. And so he was completely surrounded by the domestic culture that inspired his inventions. But when it came to the Tupperware party and being surrounded by women that made the product successful, he was absolutely terrified by them. Which was a bit unfortunate because it made him a millionaire.
Yeah, well, I've never been to a Tupperware party, but I, you know, crikey. We'll come on to Tupperware parties in a moment. So he invents the Tupperware box. How did we get from there to Tupperware parties? He wasn't a very good salesman, or what happened?
No, I think he invented actually, the first object was actually this Wonder Bowl, the very simple bowl with a lid. And he had a warehouse in Rhode Island absolutely packed to the ceiling with this stuff that he couldn't shift. He tried all sorts of elaborate advertising techniques and department store demonstrations, and it failed to sell. So it was just a woman, Brownie Wise, that happened to find this product in a catalogue. And she thought, wow, this would be great to sell in people's homes to other women, among other women. And so she became the most successful salesperson. She was buying it from Earl Tupper, and he was, most of his stuff was being sold to her to then sell on. And so she pitched him the idea that this product should be sold exclusively through parties.
Did that exist before? Because when we think of that, we think of kind of Anne Summers parties and we think of Tupperware parties. But I'm just, where did these advent of party selling, party plans arrive?
In the 1920s, there had been aluminium ware sales parties, and there was also the Fuller Brush Man, this kind of renowned, iconic figure in American culture who went door to door selling different types of brushes. So it had existed before, but it had never been an actual kind of party. And the thing about Tupperware was it was kind of frozen daiquiris, that you could slightly subvert the party theme. But it looked like women were just doing something dull and domestic, but they could actually socialize. And quite a lot of the games that were in the center of the Tupperware party were very much kind of letting off steam about their frustrated domestic lives and boring husbands.
So it is a social indoctrination story as well, the Tupperware party, isn't it? It's a way of,
yes.
The sort of symbol of liberating women from domestic drudgery, and here is a way of expressing domesticity that hadn't been done before.
I think I started my whole book thinking it was the ultimate capitalist trick to lure these women into selling stuff in their own homes and buy a whole load of kind of useless plastic stuff. But I met so many women that were actually liberated by getting paid, by belonging to a kind of network of other women that supported them, that during the 1950s and 60s had no other opportunities to work flexibly, that I started to kind of dial down my judgmental idea about Tupperware and what it did, because actually many women genuinely did benefit from being part of this corporate culture that celebrated women.
Okay, take us to a Tupperware party. It's 1950-something. What happens when I turn up at a Tupperware party?
Okay, you turn up at a Tupperware party. Firstly, you have to be in the know to receive an invitation. So you have to be in certain social circles to get the invitation to the Tupperware party.
Interesting.
You come into the...
Which is fun.
The host's living room, and it might be very beautifully decorated. And then a Tupperware hostess will serve refreshments while a demonstrator shows you the products. And quite often that might involve things like filling a Tupperware bowl with water, flinging it across the room, kind of showing you how you can make a frozen strawberry daiquiri in a cocktail shaker. So it's very performative and fun. And you then, the hostess who's given her home over to this party, can get gifts according to how much is sold within her living room. And then within the living room, the guests also get recruited to become hostesses. So you can see how it spreads through suburbia.
It's like a pyramid selling thing.
It's not pyramid. No, it's definitely not pyramid, because there actually is a product involved, and they're actually, you know, it's definitely more horizontal as a business structure. And women start helping each other to build up sales teams in a particular area, and they end up with the franchise. So, but it's very convivial, and the idea is it's very convivial. Obviously, lots of women feel obliged to attend a Tupperware party that their good friend has put on. So there is a lot of moral, social obligation involved, and feeling like you've got to buy something.
Well, I know. Well, it is embarrassing if you're sitting in your best friend's living room and they're advertising this thing and demonstrating this wonderful product to not buy it. I think the pressure is to not buy it would be quite immense. So it's like, okay, just to be nice, you're going to buy it, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing about when you look at the adverts, they're all from the 50s in America in particular. It's all lots of white nuclear families looking really jolly with beautiful suburban. But that actually isn't the truth at all about Tupperware, because it works best in places with very coherent social networks, like where lots of women know each other and their extended families. In actual fact, it worked really well in particular ethnic groups like Latino or Jewish networks of Tupperware salespeople. And that's even true today, is that it's done really well in Central South America, where there's still lots of women that actually there's lots of familial structures and stuff. So definitely takes advantage of social kind of networks.
There was an interesting line of yours I read in one of your articles. It talked about the glamorization of domesticity as a form of entrapment.
Were those my words?
They were your words. I asterisked it because I was like, that's a great line. It's like, as a form of entrapment, was it a con of a way of keeping the kitchen central to women's lives, but without them feeling the drudgery of it all?
I think it was. I mean, Tupperware came out at the same time as arch-feminist Betty Friedan's A Feminine Mystique, which was an expose. Her book was an expose of the myth of the wonderful housewife's life. And Tupperware encapsulates everything she was trying to say in that book about there being a whole generation of women who were living on Valium to survive their dreadfully dull lives of serving children and husbands. And so, yeah, Tupperware definitely adds in. But what I want to say is that doesn't mean the women who sold it and had the parties were really like that, because I quickly found out there was a lot of subversion going on, a lot of things that maybe the Tupperware company didn't know about that were going on in Tupperware parties. And
like what kind of things? Political subversion.
Interesting you should mention that, because one of the best articles I read was from the early 70s from a journal called Radical Feminism, and it was about infiltrating Tupperware parties in order to raise consciousness about, you know, consciousness raising exercise to make Tupperware women into feminists. So it was definitely seen as very conservative, but that you could maybe utilize the same technique to politicize women and make them see the light. So it's quite funny. But no, I think it was more gossiping about husbands, basically kind of. One of the favorite party games was write an advert to sell your husband, which just involved women listing all the terrible things about their own husbands and then trying to get rid of them by writing a false advert to put a polish on their husband's snoring or their lack of kind of help around the house. So alcohol wasn't supposed to be served at Tupperware parties according to the corporate rules, but of course it was frequently. And some of the best Tupperware parties even today are obviously drag Tupperware parties, and it does not stay within just this kind of heterosexual, gender binary sort of territory. It's definitely gone off piste in that respect.
It sounds like it follows the sort of cultural norms of Facebook, of social media now. The Tupperware party was a kind of a proto social media Facebook group.
Well, in some ways, I've never thought of it like that, but it's definitely about kind of who you know and who gets liked enough to come to the Tupperware party and who's out of the Tupperware party. And then the kind of obligation, even if you don't want to be sociable, that you've got to attend these things. So yeah, definitely there is kind of element of that. But I think the most important thing about it, Tupperware, is that it's what I discovered very quickly when I was researching it was it very little of it is about the actual plastic container. It's just all the cultural kind of rituals around it. and its meaning.
Well, that's it. It's interesting because here we are doing a programme about the invention of Tupperware. And it's like, well, OK, there was a guy, Earl Tupper, and he invented a plastic box using new materials. And that's kind of where it ends. And he's an interesting guy, but it's sort of where the story... But it doesn't end there because, as you say, this is not a story about a plastic box. This is a story about human social values and the values we attribute to our things in our life and the artefacts in our lives.
Hi there, I'm Don Wildman, the host of the brand new podcast, American History Hit. Join me twice a week as I explore the past to help us understand the United States today. You'll hear how code breakers uncovered secret Japanese plans for the Battle of Midway, visit Chief Powhatan as he prepares for war with the British, see Walt Disney accuse his former colleagues of being communists, and uncover the hidden history that lies beneath Central Park. From pre-colonial America to independence, slavery to civil rights, the gold rush to the space race. I'll be speaking to leading experts to delve into America's past. New episodes dropping every Monday and Thursday. So join me on American History Hit, a podcast by History Hit.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I just want to go back a little bit. I want to talk about Brownie Wise, the woman who invented the Tupperware party. Can you just tell us a little bit about her? Because we haven't really established who she was and where she got her ideas from. And that would be useful, I think.
Well, I think it's really interesting because not only is it a story about a man and a woman, you know, it's definitely the man creates this stereotypical utilitarian patented object. And then the woman makes it all frilly and attractive and sells it to other women. It's really culturally a Tupper. Earl Tupper was very Protestant New England. He saw himself as creating this almost sacred object. And he fell out with Brownie Wise because she was the woman who built up the business, Tupperware Home Parties. But rumor had it that she'd fed her dog, her pet dog, from a Tupperware bowl. And Earl Tupper found out about this. And that was the beginning of the end for Brownie Wise because she'd insulted his kind of sacred, simple object by putting it on the ground and letting an animal eat from it. And whereas he was, I would say, quite middle class, or self-made, completely self-made kind of business person. But Brownie Wise was very much more popular culture. She was a single mother. Her husband had abandoned her. And I think she also came from a Jewish background, which had a completely different, within American immigration, had a completely different relationship to consumption and consumer culture. So kind of all of the sort of glamour. And she wasn't trying to create this purity around Tupperware. She wanted the fun element. And Earl Tupper was this slightly grumpy, boring inventor man, really.
But there's an interesting sort of clash of cultures, a sort of clash of values based around a simple box.
Absolutely. One of the best pieces of the research was looking at photographs of their homes. So Brownie Wives was still alive when I did the research and I actually interviewed her, and it was amazing. I would have been selling Tupperware that afternoon if I could have. She was so amazing. She told me to look up to the stars, reach to the stars, anything I wanted could be mine. She was amazing. And meanwhile, Earl Tupper, and so her home had been, I'd seen all the pictures of her home. It was in, she had like flamingo pink sofas and she had a pink canary, a dyed pink canary. Totally amazing. Whereas Earl Tupper's home was totally New England, antique furniture, really austere. So they could not have been further removed from each other culturally.
It's so interesting because, of course, when you think about the Tupperware box just as an object, it is a kind of Puritan object. It's simple, it's clean lines, you know, it's that. And yet the story becomes flamboyant and ridiculous, not ridiculous, but about so many different things and aspirational and fashionable and everything else. And it's really interesting how both of those languages are woven into this box.
Absolutely. And Earl Tupper really resented the fact that his invention didn't sell because it was good and pure and functional. It sold because of all of the trappings of the Tupperware party and the kind of cultural messiness of these women getting together. And he really resented that. He sacked Brownie Wise, even though she'd made him a millionaire. She left Tupperware with the company with absolutely nothing and went on to be a potter.
Oh, there you go. Cultural messiness. This is our take-home fact about the Tupperware. Actually, let's just talk about the box itself. What, I mean, apart from the cultural messiness and the values and the social politics surrounding it, what was, for those women who were selling it, like, what was the functional reason why somebody wanted to buy it? What was the kind of revolutionary thing, just from a practical point of view?
I think time-saving. The idea that you could save leftovers, you could bulk cook and store it, and you didn't have to be a slave to the kitchen because you could be more rational. It could be a rationalized kitchen. And they actually demonstrated before and after cupboards. So it's sort of really tied into this American self-help culture that you could better yourself through Tupperware. You know, you could improve yourself and your kitchen.
I suppose I want to move on now. There's obviously a lot of meaning, social meaning within Tupperware, but I wonder how it's changed now. That picture I mentioned at the beginning, that picture in that article of yours of just cupboards stuffed full of Tupperware. We use Tupperware as a catch-all term, a bit like Hoover, but there are so many different brands now. It doesn't have that same, the language of Tupperware has completely changed, hasn't it? It doesn't mean the same thing anymore. It's not aspirational.
It is in other parts of the world, absolutely. I mean, there's a big difference, and that's the bizarre thing. So in an age where plastic is highly problematic, it's disposable, and yet the whole idea around Tupperware is you keep it, it lasts a long time because it's high-quality plastic. And the idea was that you passed it down through your family. So, you know, many of us have inherited Tupperware from grandmothers. Or what? Yeah, we've got these old Tupperware.
I still have my mother's ice cream box. My mother's, whatever, I think it was Lion's ice cream plastic box with my sandwiches.
That's
with an old,
not the same.
I think it's, I know it's not the same. Sorry, Carrie, I interrupted.
That should definitely be got rid of. Now, I think, so in other parts of the world, it's definitely still aspirational, precisely because it's branded Tupperware. It's not just stuff you can pick up. So what they've done, the kind of the object penetrates different cultures and acts as a sort of anthropological product, because from the product and what's happening in the parties, that feeds back into the company. So the company is actually getting marketing research from whatever happens with the Tupperware parties. So that's why it can infiltrate cultures so effectively. So in a Japan in the 60s, they would have kimono keeps, like use one of the boxes to put a kimono in. But in France, it would be used for something completely different. So they're culturally nuanced wherever they go.
I have a question about this idea of the party as a sales technique. Like, why is it that we only think of Tupperware and Ann Summers? Like, what is it about those two particular brands that lends itself to parties, whereas sort of other things don't?
Well, I guess the common denominator is women, isn't it? And it's the idea that it's women having to have some sanctioned reason to get together socially, and that there has to be some kind of product focus. So definitely they're the flip side of each other. I'm sure there have been mixed Tupperware and Summers parties in many a household.
I'm sure, yeah.
I've never visited them, but I suspect
so.
That's been a theme.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Tupperware. Like, you must have gone to a Tupperware party when you were doing research.
I was horrified, yeah. I mean, I was completely mystified. It's my own mother's idea of hell was going to a Tupperware party. So she was probably a bit like Earl Tupper. She really didn't like the idea of forced female sociality, you know, being forced to go on a hen night or forced to go and talk about plastic containers in someone's living room. So I grew up almost terrified of this product. So when I first went to one, I was really shocked to find out that people did seem to at least initially talk about the plastic product before this kind of started gossiping. But yeah, it was quite weird.
How does it work? So you go in and you all sit down and everyone's a bit, I don't know, a bit, must be a bit, well, no, presumably everyone knows each other.
No, they can be neighbours. They can be neighbours. So that's an important point. If you imagine all these housing estates in the 50s and 60s where women were moved, they were totally alone. They didn't know anyone. So it also worked very well in places like that. So a way to get to know people was through a Tupperware party. And particularly women in Britain, because there was actually a really big sales study to explore the possibility of Tupperware working in any other country than the US. And the first place they tried was the UK, and it came back unequivocally saying, no, this will never happen in Britain, because nobody would sell stuff in their own homes. It's absolutely vulgar and it would never work. And the reason it did work was because of American bases. And women on American bases got access to Tupperware. So it's kind of like smuggled goods.
That's really,
and that's how it infiltrated into Britain. So
when you went to your Tupperware party, did you enjoy it? I mean, did you buy Tupperware?
Yeah, I did buy Tupperware, but I was slightly embarrassed. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to buy.
I'd be mortified going to one of those. I think I'd feel very socially awkward going to one of those.
Yeah, no, it was very weird. It was very just the whole concept of being in a room and being forced to buy products. And yeah, but people don't have time to go to parties anymore. So I think in the 80s, they tried a kind of yuppie version, like black matte Tupperware. That really didn't last long. You'd be very lucky to get hold of that now. I don't know what happened to it. It's probably in some amazing collection of Tupperware. But they tried to make it much more yuppie 80s because there was a problem with parties. And so now also there's a problem with obviously post-analog world where who's got time to actually go to a physical party?
Exactly. They'll do it by Zoom, presumably.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And knowing a dealer, kind of being in the know on who's the dealer, is still really important, except in places where they do sell it in shops in the US.
What are we going to do about people's cupboards full of Tupperware? I wonder if Tupperware, the company, actually realised that it's driving everyone crazy, the fact that you open your cupboard and it's just a million boxes of lids that don't fit. Why has no one developed a better way of keeping the lids and the boxes together? And
that's a good question. Someone will have. Perhaps there's a hack somewhere. There's probably a Tupperware hack artist who's done a whole project on that, on how to keep them together. There will be, I'm sure if you look on YouTube, there'll be someone who's got a system. I think also it's a good point because they take up a lot of space. So they're obviously originally designed for American-sized cupboards that we just don't have in Europe. So I guess we maybe in Europe, maybe they just sell less, but I don't know, more precious objects and people cherish them for longer because they take up so much space. But yeah.
That's it. You're absolutely right. Alison, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat. Go read Alison's book, Tupperware, The Promise of Plastic in 1950s America. It's a terrific read. Thank you.
Nice to talk to you.
So there we go. You will never look at a Tupperware box in the same light again. Thank you very much for listening. It's been a pleasure to have your company. Don't forget, please, to leave us a rating and a review if you've enjoyed the show. Don't forget to listen to all the other shows, and don't forget to suggest the podcast to all of your friends as well. If you have got an idea for an episode you'd like us to cover, a story perhaps, or an invention you'd like us to discuss, get in touch. We love hearing from you. We love hearing your comments and your suggestions. I will see you next time. Looking forward to it.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
While I still have you, very briefly, if you fancy getting all of the History Hit podcast archive and new episodes ad-free, along with hundreds of history documentaries to watch, download our app across Apple App Store, Google Play, and smart TV platforms. Follow the link in the show notes or go to historyhit.com/subscribe. There is thousands of hours of history on there, including a documentary on science in the Middle Ages with Seb Volk, and also one with me talking about the secret history of the space race. As a patented listener, you get a special gift if you use the code PATENTED at the checkout. You get 50% off your first 3 months. That's PATENTED for 50% off your first 3 months. And if you're an Apple listener, you can subscribe for new ad-free podcast episodes within the Apple app.